I know that Lama La has usually read the prayer list beforehand, but I promise it wasn't me just being a slacker. I wanted to read it so we could all really be sitting and hearing the names and thinking about people. So I know from time to time, I mean, we can't always do that because there's not enough time, but it seems like tonight we could maybe miss out on 1 minute of discussion to have time to do that. So I'm going to start by reading the prayer list so we can be keeping these folks in mind as we then do the rest of the time. For anybody who wants to, Geshe-la has said it's really nice to be reciting the mantra of compassion, Om Mani Padme Hum. So if you want to do that, you can. So prayers for a happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom, Geshe Sopa Rinpoche, Robin Bongiorno, Venerable Thubten Daekyong, Claudine Vasey, Mary Elizabeth Dalcom, Richard V. Elliott, Sally Comer, James Foley, Max Halperin, Anthony Masha, Shamali Mitra, Stephen Sotoloff, Miss Kitty the Cat, Michael Hardiman. I think that this is from an old list. Something is amiss because that was back in April. And Scooter the Dog. Job search for Roseanne Barona, John Carroll, Joey Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Michelle Maddich, Robert Palermo, Mark Priestup, Alex Schwartz, Sandy Wimbish. And prayers for health and well-being, Cap J. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Lodzong Tsering, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, for the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Roger and Barb Alexander, Russell Allen, Ahmed Alcusar, Mrs. Askew, Lisa Baranski, Jim Barnes, Luce and Roseanne Barona, Narcissus Barona Sr., Kitty Burke, John Carroll, Julie Castello, Jack DeLiso, Deanna Dietzler, Chiusano and her children, Ben, Carolyn Burns, Florence Constant, Dimitri and Suzanne Diamondopoulos, Andrew Flaherty, Jimmy Gooch and family, Mildred Gooch, Robert Gruber, Tracy Haas Thompson, Annie Hassel, Kathy and Francis Hayashi, Travis Henley, Leslie and Joan Inman, Nick Jablons, Katie, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Nina Kowalski, Mary Lojic, Danny Love, Tom Lynch, Liz, R.M., Tom McGinnity, Scotty McLean, Sarah Miller, Colleen Mitchell, Jose Moreno, Rivera Nielsen, Reba Gail Saunders, the family of Shamali Mitra, Evan Myrtle and family, Jay Pandya, William Oliver, Anna Papard and her many cousins throughout the Ukraine, Mark Priestup, Ken Roman, Lindsay Piatti, Brent Richardson, Eileen Rubin and family, Ariana Scott, Rosemary Cease, Sarai, Basil Shoot, Lori and Freddie Todd, Andre Smith, Lodzong Thubten, Bob Utzman, Fran Van Kirk, Dion Washington, Jessica Whitmore, Shay Wolkowicki, Bodhi the Cat, Carmen the Dog, Dorje and Kadra the Pigs, and Grady the Dog. And if you have any names you'd like to add, go ahead and say them now. Wonderful. So, really glad we could all come together tonight, and maybe we could all just take a moment to rejoice, because I'm not sure we do enough of that, and just say how great we like chose to come and then actually made it, and, you know, and how great that kind Lama La has been leading these and prepared tonight, too. I'm just being a voice box. She put this all together tonight, so she chose the, you know, the reading I'm going to do, so with a lot of gratitude for her. So I'm going to just kind of run through it the way she usually does. So why don't we start with some prayers in the white prayer book. We'll do this. We'll start with the seven-limb prayer, which is on the back of the first base sheet. And let's do it in English. Hmm. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. And then we can recite either the 4 or 5 line version. If you don't have the 5 line version memorized, the 4 line is on the pink sheet for the praise and request to Lama Tsongkhapa. It's near the bottom of the front of the pink sheet. And so you can say it in English or Tibetan and however you wish. And why don't we'll do it a total of 21 times. So let's do it 20 times to ourselves, and then I'll chant the 4 line version to signify that we're concluding. Mi'kmé tsé-wé tse-chen-chen-re-zi dreamé kempé wampo jampé yang gong chen kepé tsu Okay, and then I'll be reading so it's sort of done in two parts is the way Lama Law has been doing it. So a small section of the outline of the Lamrim Chenmo by Lama Tsongkhapa. And it's a translation actually that came partly from the folks who wrote or translated the 3-volume set that we're using on Wednesday nights. And then also Geshe-la had gone through this with Tendrin Law a while back and sort of made it very precise. And so that's what the excerpt is at the beginning that I'll read. And then there's going to be a reading from a book by His Holiness on the Four Noble Truths. So that'll be our focus for a little while. But let me first read the benefits of this practice that Lama La has been pointing out each time. So from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he says, "I regard as the most important thing in the world anybody who dedicates his or her life to achieving Lamrim realizations with the goal to liberate numberless beings from the oceans of samsaric suffering and bring them to enlightenment. Keep the mind in Lamrim, guru devotion, renunciation of samsara, and bodhicitta. These things help you to not commit negative karma again. Every day meditate on the Lamrim and keep it in your mind, even during break times from sitting meditation." And then she has a quote that she's read from Geshe-la several times too, where Geshe-la has said, "Reciting the Lamrim outline is superior to saying millions of mantras, to having clairvoyance or seeing deities. Review meditations, leave imprints of the Lamrim on your mind stream like footprints in the sand. Make many footprints in the sand. This is how you increase the chance to meet Lama Tsongkhapa's teachings in your next life. The footprints will stay a long time, whether the footprint is good or bad. So we're going to do this as a meditation, so it's good to sort of get in that posture. And if you're not familiar with what that is, the main thing is just to keep your back straight. So does anybody have any questions before I dive into reading this? No? Okay. And please feel free, to do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself. I didn't time this, so I'm not exactly sure how long it's going to be. But if it gets too long, it's okay to stretch your legs or stand up or do whatever you need to do. So, I'm going to, just maybe recommend that we just take a couple of deep breaths to sort of, as Lama Yeshe says, get our mind where our body is and just sort of settle in. And then we might want to set a motivation for reading the Lamrim outline, something like, by reviewing each word of this Lamrim outline, may I and all sentient beings realize the whole path to enlightenment. May each word of this Lamrim outline subdue our minds immediately. May the whole path to enlightenment be generated in the minds of all sentient beings. So now to review, we're on training the mind in the stages of the path shared with persons of medium capacity. So training the mind in the stages of the path shared with persons of medium capacity has four parts. One, the mental training. Two, the measure of the determination to be free. Three, dispelling misconceptions. Four, ascertaining the nature of the path leading to liberation. The mental training has two parts. One, identifying the mind intent on liberation. Two, the method for developing the mind intent on liberation. And the method for developing the mind intent on liberation has two parts. One, reflection on suffering and its origin. Two, reflection from the viewpoint of the 12 dependent arisings. Reflection on suffering and its origin has two parts. One, reflection on the truth of suffering, the faults of cyclic existence. Two, reflection on the process of cyclic existence in terms of its origin. Reflection on the truth of suffering, the faults of cyclic existence has two parts. One, showing the significance of the Buddha's asserting the truth of suffering as the first of the four truths. And two, the actual meditation on suffering. The actual meditation on suffering has two parts. One, reflection on the universal suffering of cyclic existence. And two, reflection on specific sufferings. Reflection on the universal suffering of cyclic existence has three parts. One, reflection on the eight types of suffering. Two, reflection on the six types of suffering. Three, reflection on the three types of suffering. Reflection on the eight types of suffering has eight parts. One, the suffering of birth. Two, the suffering of old age. Three, the suffering of illness. Four, the suffering of death. Five, the suffering of encountering what is unpleasant. Six, the suffering of separation from what is pleasant. Seven, the suffering of not getting what you want. And eight, the suffering of the five appropriated aggregates. Reflection on the six types of suffering has six parts. One, the fault of uncertainty. Two, the fault of insatiability. Three, the fault of casting off bodies repeatedly. 4. The fault of repeated rebirth. 5. The fault of repeatedly descending from high to low. 6. The fault of having no companions. Reflection on the three types of suffering has three parts. 1. The suffering of suffering. 2. The suffering of change. And 3. The suffering of conditionality. So that's the end of the outline review. And next is an excerpt from the book The Four Noble Truths by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. When the great universal teacher Shakyamuni Buddha first spoke about the Dharma in the noble land of India, he taught the Four Noble Truths. The truths of suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path to the cessation of suffering. These four are all-encompassing, including many things within them. Considering the Four Noble Truths in general and the fact that none of us wants suffering and we all desire happiness, we can speak of an effect and a cause on both the disturbing side and the liberating side. True sufferings and true causes are the effect and cause on the side of things that we do not want. True cessation and true paths are the effect and cause on the side of things that we desire. The first noble truth, the truth of suffering. We experience many different types of suffering. All are included in three categories: the suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and all pervasive suffering. Suffering of suffering refers to things such as headaches and so forth. Even animals recognize this kind of suffering and, like us, want to be free from it. Because beings have fear of and experience discomfort from these kinds of suffering, they engage in various activities to eliminate them. Suffering of change refers to situations where, for example, we are sitting very comfortably relaxed, and at first everything seems all right. But after a while, we lose that feeling and get restless and uncomfortable. In certain countries, we see a great deal of poverty and disease. These are the sufferings of the first category. Everybody realizes that these are suffering conditions to be eliminated and improved upon. In many Western countries, poverty may not be that much of a problem, but where there is a high degree of material development, there are different kinds of problems. At first, we may be happy having overcome the problems that our predecessors faced, but as soon as we have solved certain problems, new ones arise. We have plenty of money, plenty of food, and nice housing. But by exaggerating the value of these things, we render them ultimately worthless. This sort of experience is the suffering of change. A very poor, underprivileged person might think that it would be wonderful to have a car or a television set, and, should he acquire them, would at first feel very happy and satisfied. Now, if such happiness were permanent, as long as he had the car and the TV set, he would remain happy. But he does not. His happiness goes away. After a few months, he wants another kind of car. If he has the money, he will buy a better television set. The old things, the same objects that once gave him much satisfaction, now cause dissatisfaction. That is the nature of change, That is the problem of the suffering of change. All-pervasive suffering is the third type of suffering. It is called all-pervasive because it acts as the basis of the first two. There may be those who, even in developed countries, want to be liberated from the second suffering, the suffering of change. Bored with the defiled feeling of happiness, they seek the feeling of equanimity, which can lead to rebirth in the formlessness realm that has only that feeling. Now, desiring liberation from the first two categories of suffering is not the principal motivation for seeking liberation from cyclic existence. The Buddha taught that the root of the three sufferings is the third, all-pervasive suffering. Some people commit suicide. They seem to think that there is suffering simply because there is human life and that by ending their life, there will be nothing. This third, all-pervasive suffering is under the control of karma and the disturbing mind. We can see, without having to think very deeply, that this is under the control of karma and disturbing mind of previous lives. Anger and attachment arise simply because we have these present aggregates. The aggregate of compounding phenomena is like an enabler for us to generate karma and these disturbing minds. This is called nang ye lin, literally taking a bad place. Because that which forms is related to taking the bad place of disturbing minds and is under their control, it supports our generating disturbing minds and keeps us from virtue. All our suffering can be traced back to these aggregates of attachment and clinging. Perhaps when you realize that your aggregates are the cause of all your suffering, you might think that suicide is the way out. Well, if there were no continuity of mind, no future life, all right. If you had the courage, you could finish yourself off. But according to the Buddhist viewpoint, that's not the case. Your consciousness will continue. Even if you take your own life, this life, you will have to take another body that will again be the basis of suffering. If you really want to get rid of all your suffering, all the difficulties you experience in your life, you have to get rid of the fundamental cause that gives rise to the aggregates that are the basis of all suffering. Killing yourself isn't going to solve your problems. Because this is the case, we must now investigate the cause of suffering. Is there a cause or not? If there is, what kind of cause is it? A natural cause, which cannot be eliminated, or a cause that depends on its own cause and therefore can be? If it is a cause that can be overcome, is it possible for us to overcome it? Thus we come to the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering. Buddhists maintain that there is no external creator, and that even though a Buddha is the highest being, even a Buddha does not have the power to create new life. So now, what is the cause of suffering? Generally, the ultimate cause is the mind. The mind that is influenced by negative thoughts, such as anger, attachment, jealousy, and so forth, is the main cause of birth and all such other problems. However, there is no possibility of ending the mind, of interrupting the stream of consciousness itself. Therefore, there is nothing intrinsically wrong with the deepest level of mind. It is simply influenced by the negative thoughts. Thus, the question is whether or not we can fight and control anger, attachment, and the other disturbing negative minds. If we can eradicate these, we shall be left with a pure mind that is free from the causes of suffering. This brings us to the disturbing negative minds, the delusions, which are mental factors. There are many different ways of presenting the discussion of the mind, but in general, the mind itself is something that is mere clarity and awareness. When we speak of disturbing attitudes such as anger and attachment, we have to see how they are able to affect and pollute the mind. What, in fact, is their nature? This, then, is the discussion of the cause of suffering. If we ask how attachment and anger arise, the answer is that they are undoubtedly assisted by our grasping at things to be true and inherently real. When, for instance, we are angry with someone, we feel that the object is out there, solid, true, and unimputed, and that we ourselves are likewise something solid and findable. Before we get angry, the object appears ordinary, but when our mind is influenced by anger, the object looks ugly, completely repulsive, nauseating. Something we want to get rid of immediately, it appears really to exist in that way, solid, independent, and very unattractive. This appearance of truly ugly fuels our anger. Yet when we see the same object the next day, when our anger has subsided, it seems more beautiful than it did the day before. It's the same object, but it doesn't seem as bad. This shows how anger and attachment are influenced by our grasping at things as being true and unimputed. Thus, the texts on middle way, the Madhyamaka philosophy, state that the root of all the disturbing negative minds is grasping at true existence, that this assists them and brings them about, that the closed-minded ignorance that grasps at things as being inherently, truly real is the basic source of all our suffering. Based on this grasping at true existence, we develop all kinds of disturbing negative minds and create a great deal of negative karma. In his Entering the Middle Way, the Madhyamakavatara, the great Indian Pandit Chandrakirti says that first there's attachment to the self, which is then followed by grasping at things and becoming attached to them as mine. At first, there is a very solid, independent I that is very big, bigger than anything else. This is the basis. From this gradually comes, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Then, we. Then, because of our taking this side, come others, our enemies. Towards I and mine, attachment arises. Towards him, her, and them, we feel distance and anger. Then jealousy and all such competitive feelings arise. Thus, ultimately, the problem is this feeling of I. Not the mere I, but the I with which we become obsessed. This gives rise to anger and irritation, along with harsh words and all the physical expressions of aversion and hatred. All these negative actions of body, speech, and mind accumulate bad karma. Killing, cheating, and all similar negative actions also result from bad motivation. The first stage is solely mental, the disturbing negative minds. In the second stage, these negative minds express themselves in actions, karma. Immediately, the atmosphere is disturbed. With anger, for example, the atmosphere becomes tense. People feel uneasy. If somebody gets furious, gentle people try to avoid that person. Later on, the person who got angry also feels embarrassed and ashamed for having said all sorts of absurd things, whatever came into his or her mind. When you get angry, there's no room for logic or reason. You become literally mad. Later, when your mind has returned to normal, you feel ashamed. There's nothing good about anger and attachment. Nothing good can result from them. They may be difficult to control, but everybody can realize that there is nothing good about them. This, then, is the second noble truth. Now the question arises whether or not these kinds of negative mind can be eliminated. The third noble truth, the truth of cessation of suffering. The root of all disturbing negative minds is our grasping at things as truly existent. Therefore, we have to investigate whether this grasping mind is correct or whether it is distorted and seeing things incorrectly. We can do this by investigating how the things it perceives actually exist. However, since this mind itself is incapable of seeing whether or not it apprehends objects correctly, we have to rely on another kind of mind. If, upon investigation, we discover many other valid ways of looking at things, and that all these contradict or negate the way that the mind that grasps at true existence perceives its objects, we can say that this mind does not see reality. Thus, with the mind that can analyze the ultimate, we must try to determine whether the mind that grasps at things as truly findable is correct or not. If it is correct, the analyzing mind should ultimately be able to find the grasped at things. The great classics of the mind only, the Cittamatra, and especially the middle way schools, contain many lines of reasoning for carrying out such investigation. Following these, when you investigate to see whether the mind that grasps at things as inherently findable is correct or not, you find that it is not correct, that it is distorted. You cannot actually find the objects at which it grasps. Since this mind is deceived by its object, it has to be eliminated. Thus, through investigation, we find no valid support for the grasping mind, but do find the support of logical reasoning for the mind that realizes that the grasping mind is invalid. In spiritual battle, the mind supported by logic is always victorious over the mind that is not. The understanding that there is no such thing as truly findable existence constitutes the deep, clear nature of mind. The mind that grasps at things as truly findable is superficial and fleeting. When we eliminate the disturbing negative minds, the cause of all suffering, we eliminate the suffering as well. This is liberation, or the cessation of suffering, the third noble truth. Since it is possible to achieve this, we must now look at the method. This brings us to the fourth noble truth. The fourth noble truth, the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. When we speak of the paths common to the three vehicles of Buddhism, Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana, we are referring to the 37 factors that bring enlightenment. When we speak specifically of the paths of the Bodhisattva's vehicle, the Mahayana, we are referring to the 10 levels and the 6 transcendent perfections. The primary concern of followers of the Mahayana path is not merely their own liberation, but the enlightenment of all sentient beings. With this motivation of bodhicitta, their hearts set on attaining enlightenment as the best means of helping others, these practitioners practice the 6 transcendent perfections and gradually progress through the 10 bodhisattva levels until they have completely overcome both types of obscurations and attained the supreme enlightenment of Buddhahood. This is the path and the result of the Mahayana. The essence of the practice of the 6 transcendent perfections is the unification of method and wisdom so that the 2 enlightened bodies, Rupakaya and Dharmakaya, can be attained. Since they can be attained only simultaneously, their causes must be cultivated simultaneously. Therefore, together we must build up a store of merit as the cause of the Rupakaya, the body of form, and a store of deep awareness or insight as the cause of the Dharmakaya, the body of wisdom. In the Pramitayana, we practice method grasped by wisdom and wisdom grasped by method. But in the Vajrayana, we practice method and wisdom as one in nature. Okay, so that concludes the sections that Lamala prepared for us. So maybe just split into 2 groups since we're not so many. and we can have a little discussion. And you can talk about anything that came up for you in relation to this, but in case you're stuck and need a couple questions to get you started, I'm not going to check to see who actually answers them. Kind of a broad question, why do you think Shakyamuni Buddha taught these 4 as the first teaching? So, you know, why did the 4 Noble Truths come at the very start? One that's kind of a classic one that we all talk about a lot, but I think still comes up for people is, you know, why talk about suffering? I mean, we've got the quick platitude like, you know, because it's where we all are or whatever, but to maybe dig deeper if y'all want in your group about why and how that helps. And then sort of looking at what is renunciation? What does that really mean? You know, does it mean shunning everything or does it mean something slightly different from that? Or so anyway, use those or not, but if you're stuck, I can remind you of what those were. So any questions before we break into groups? No? Okay. I think we got about 20 minutes left, and then I'll ring the bell and we'll come back and read the Foundation of All Good Qualities and dedicate. Okay, so I've got another quote that Lama Laz prepared from Lama Zopa Rinpoche talking about reading the Foundation of All Good Qualities. And he says, reciting a Lam Rim prayer every day is the fundamental daily practice that renders each day of your life most meaningful. When you recite a Lam Rim prayer mindfully from beginning to end, your recitation becomes a direct meditation on the entire path to enlightenment and leaves imprints or seeds of the realizations of the path on your mental continuum. With each recitation, you draw closer to enlightenment and therefore closer to enlightening all sentient beings, which is the main goal of your life, the purpose of being alive. This is the unbelievable benefit of doing direct meditation on the Lam Rim every day of your life. So in the pamphlet, it's near the back here. Yeah, page 17, thanks. The foundation of all good qualities. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is greatly meaningful, and is difficult to find again, please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly day and night takes its essence. This life is as permanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the pratimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all mother migratory beings. Please bless me to see this, train in supreme bodhicitta, and bear the responsibility of freeing migratory beings. Even if I merely develop bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I have pacified distractions to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified path of calm abiding and special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general path, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. At that time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows and samaya. As I have become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the gurus who show the noble path and the spiritual friends who practice it have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separated from perfect gurus, may I enjoy the magnificent Dharma. By completing the qualities of the stages and paths, may I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. Okay, and then let's do a couple of dedication prayers in the white prayer book. Go back to that first pink sheet again on the front. And we'll start with the dedication verses from Shantideva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the Siddur's moral way, who serve as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior, myself, and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of non-objectifying compassion, Manjushri, master of stainless wisdom, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel, the sages of the land of snows, Tolosandrapa, at your feet I make requests. And then we'll do seven of Green Tara's mantra, and we do this for Geshe Gelug's long, happy, healthy life and for his quick return to come back to teach us on Wednesday nights. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Great. Thanks, everybody.